All right, welcome into the latest edition of the Rocky Top Talk podcast. I am your host, Terry Lambert, joined by Nick Carner today. Nick, quite a day to make your podcasting debut, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Most definitely trial by fire today, for yeah. Sure.
Yeah, I've thrown Nick into the deep end of the pool here. Tennessee has fired Jeremy Pruitt for cause. That's the big story of the day. An entire new direction. Philip Fulmer has stepped down. He is going to be retiring as the athletics director. Just a massive, massive, honestly, dark day on Rocky Top. We've got so much to talk about. We're gonna dive right in. If you're not familiar with our work, RockyTopTalk.com. Very, very busy day over there. If you need to catch up on any of the news, it's all posted over there. But Jeremy Pruitt, after 3 years, is out. The 16-19 record finishes with a 3-7 mark on the 2020 season. All of that kind of takes a back seat to the recruiting investigation done internally by Tennessee. It broke on the day of the final game, the game against Texas A&M. And from the jump, you always kind of kept in the back of your head, hey, maybe Tennessee is kind of doing this, trying to get out of this massive buyout that they put themselves into with this extension that they gave Pruitt before the start of the season. $12.8 million, I believe. Chancellor Plowman says that they're not going to pay a dime of that after what they found in this investigation. So a really, really dark time, Nick, and it leaves Tennessee in a really uncertain place.
Yeah, you know, of course, and for Tennessee fans, it's, you know, becoming all too familiar, and it's kind of odd. I think it's gotten to the point where, you know, Vol fans are like looking forward to this kind of thing.
Right.
it's these coaching searches, these Tennessee coaching searches, they tend to be far more exciting than the product that has been on the field lately. And so, you know, I think in the end, it's a good thing. I think most Tennessee fans sort of feel the same way. But, you know, was there any point in prolonging this whole ordeal?
Right.
I think, at least my opinion of it, and I think this a lot of people probably felt the same way, if this investigation turns up things that enabled us to get out of paying that buyout, then, you know, it really had to be done. You know, the product on the field has just been, it's been really bad, and that's even using Tennessee's recent scale of just being consistently really bad. And so, you know, I wonder. The whole thing has kind of been weird, though, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Like the hiring of Steele there, that was kind of in the middle of a hiring freeze. What did you make of all that and the transition here?
Hey, well, I think you hit the nail on the head. That, you know, you hire Kevin Steele when there's been a reported hiring freeze, immediately, you know, my antenna kind of goes up.
Yes.
And I think most everybody was with me there, and that was just such an easy transition, you know, maybe not for 2021, but maybe to be the interim, and maybe he sticks around. But I saw right through that, and I think most of the fan base did. And right then and there, we kind of figured, hey, we've got something serious here. So the amount of time this took really hurts. You know, you talk about it being a good thing. I 100% agree. In the long term, had to be done. But you know, for the amount of time that it took, and I know they really can't control this, Tennessee's hurting. I mean, it's bad. So yeah. this 2021 class, you're going to be able to let people out of their letters of intention sign. You know, you've already seen this transfer portal. 10 guys enter since December 1st.
Oh, that's absurd.
A couple of guys have come out. I think you're going to see a couple more enter now that they're in. The reaction, of course, from the players was not great. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're done with the fallout here. Just the fact that it took so long is kind of devastating. And now you've got to kind of ask yourself, how attractive is this job? Because now you're looking at, to quote Plowman here, multiple level one and two recruiting violations.
Mm-hmm.
That tells me a postseason ban, maybe for a year, maybe for two, loss of scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to make whoever comes into this job, it's going to make their job that much tougher. So you've got to kind of ask yourself, who's going to take this job? And we're going to get into that. But to me, just in a general sense, I think you've got to go after a veteran. I think you've got to go after someone that's been there, done that at the Power 5 level. That's a tough ask right now. Let's be clear. That you're putting your career on the line. It's going to take someone like a Gus Malzahn. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of the first name that I went to come in here, clean things up, be squeaky clean recruiting. Going to be some really lean years. The fan base is going to have to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back and understand why the Pruitt era kind of failed. I mean, when you look at Jeremy, he was brought in to be an elite recruiter, which he did, you know, and it turns out that he was fired for that, interestingly enough. But I think he swung and he missed too many times on the offensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Tyson Helton, offensive coordinator. Jim Chaney, big ticket, offensive coordinator. Neither guy worked. Chris Winkie, the quarterback's coach, couldn't develop anybody. Jerry Garantano, JT Shrout, transfer out. Brian Maurer never really settled in. Now, what are you left with? You're left with Harrison Bailey. You're left with Hendon Hooker, the transfer from Virginia Tech. His inability to develop on the offensive side and really hire the right guy, I think, did him in.
Well, and, you know, if you go back even to the initial offensive coordinator hire, you know, if you look at Helton and you look at what he'd done at his previous stops, you know, what it's always kind of confused me in, you know, just along the lines of, I imagine Pruitt had an idea of what he wanted to do offensively, and, you know, how does he look at Tyson Helton's track record, and how does he look at that and say, you know, what this guy does is what I want to do offensively? Because to me, just from an outside perspective, it never looked like it was a good match.
Yep.
And then, you know, we talk about, you know, Pruitt, what he did wrong and his mistakes. And, you know, I think you nailed it in the sense that, you know, the just gross mismanagement of the quarterback room, I think as important as the quarterback has become in modern day football, if there's one position that you've got to nail, or if you don't nail, at least don't miss it so badly, because I think that really, I think specifically, obviously, the offense, but more specifically, the quarterback, that I feel like is the biggest indictment on Pruitt, and it's, you know, a major reason why we're sitting here in the situation that we're in. And you know, I think you know, Winky, it's Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, and you know, in the future, apparently he's been pretty instrumental in the recruiting of, isn't it Ty Simpson, the five-star in 2022?
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, that's a positive, but you've had several years here with, you know, with Trout, Maurer, and JG, and I don't feel like you saw any real development. And
right.
even worse, you know, Garantano, I think, was significantly worse this season than he was last season. And, you know, I think there's that weight is obviously shared amongst all the offensive coaches. And I think Pruitt probably bears a lot of the responsibility for sticking with Garantano when, you know, just as an example, you know, Shrout comes in and I think he I don't remember which game it was, but he got one drive, he threw an interception, and he went to the bench.
Yeah, the Kentucky game.
Yeah. And, you know, the Kentucky game was really, I think, where you saw the season totally go off the rails.
Yeah, maybe his entire, you know, Tennessee coaching tenure go off the rails.
No, you're absolutely correct. And so, I think if you really, you know, if you really want to point to one thing and say, you know, where did it go wrong, I think it's the quarterback room. And but again, from the jump, you know, the Helton match never made sense to me. And then, you know, who was really behind, you know, was Chaney, did he have influence in who played, how many snaps, what the rotation was like as far as the quarterbacks went, or was that Pruitt? And you know, I'd be interested to know what that dynamic was like, because you know, I obviously don't know Jeremy Pruitt personally, but it kind of seemed like perhaps, you know, even defensively with Ansley, and then on the offensive side of the ball with Chaney, I kind of wonder how much Pruitt had his hands in those various different things when he probably would have been better suited to be delegating.
No, it's absolutely a really good point. I've thought the same. I think many Tennessee fans feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Just seemed, again, we don't have any concrete evidence on this, but mm-hmm. it just seemed like he kind of had his hands in all the cookie jars, and
yeah.
you know, and when. If he wants to go help out the defense, that's fine. But
yes.
you've hired Jim Chaney to go do his job. paid him a lot of money to do so. Go let him do his job.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I look at this roster, and in year three, if Jerry Garantano is your best option, you've failed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really don't like to rail on the kid because JG went through it a lot. He's a tough guy. I truly think he gave his all for Tennessee.
He took a lot of hits and got right back up every time.
Took a lot of crap from the fans, mm-hmm. from the media, you know. But the development wasn't there. It happens,
mm-hmm.
you know. And in today's age of the transfer portal, to not come up with a better solution there is ultimately what got him fired.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll always believe that. You know, COVID or not, I know this mm-hmm. was a strange off season, but
yep.
guess what? Everybody had to deal with it.
Absolutely.
So, I'm not really letting that be a legitimate excuse either.
Go
ahead.
You saw what JT Daniels did
right.
at Georgia, you know, coming in and the first couple games, before he was playing versus when he took control of that offense, I mean, the difference was night and day.
Yep.
And so I, you know, I, again, I don't know where, how to distribute the blame, but ultimately, you know, ultimately it falls on Pruitt.
Right. I mean, you can't say anything else. So, did Tennessee have an opportunity here with this investigation? Absolutely. Do they investigate if he goes 7-3 this year? No, they don't. Yeah. That's college football. You know, that's just what it is. Tennessee had a chance. They took advantage of it. Mm-hmm. They saved $12 million. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're at. Tennessee is going to move on. Now the attention turns first to the athletics director. Tennessee has to hire an athletics director. Phillip Fulmer stepping down. That's a whole other can of worms. You know, I applaud Fulmer for stepping in when he did. It was a disaster. How did he get the job? There's some talk about that. We'll never know. Yeah. But Tennessee is turning the page. Fresh start. Badly, badly, badly needed. So first of all, they've got to hire an AD. We're not going to sit here and roll through athletic director candidates because, quite honestly, we don't know.
Yep.
They're going to make that hire. The question becomes, who in the world is interested in this job? Mm-hmm. And I think right off the bat, you've got to talk about Hugh Freeze, because that's been the guy with the Tennessee fan base. And I don't know about you, but listening to that press conference earlier today, Hugh Freeze is not happening at Tennessee. You know, the words integrity, winning the right way, were all thrown around. I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you know what Hugh Freeze did. If you didn't, go ahead and Google it.
Yep.
I just don't think they're going to go down that route, but I do think they need to get a proven guy in here, and that's why I mentioned Gus Malzahn. Mm-hmm. That's why a guy like Tom Herman, maybe getting a second chance, is attractive. To me, okay, let's stick it to you. If you're Jamie Chadwell, if you're Billy Napier, are you even entertaining this Tennessee job with these potential sanctions coming down the pike?
Well, see, and I think, and this kind of circles back to Kevin Steele a little bit, and I think this question is really dependent on the timeline that we're looking at, and I don't know that, I don't know that from listening to the press conference, you know, I listened, I think I, you know, I watched it live, and then I think I maybe read a transcript of it. But, you know, my interpretation, it didn't seem like this was expected to be like a 30 to 60 day type deal. Now, and I could be totally wrong because I have no idea. But, you know, if I'm Jamie Chadwell, and this is, you know, this comes down to, in a couple months, we've got an AD and we're looking for a coach, but Chadwell's looking at the situation and we've caught, you know, a significant reduction in scholarships and also a postseason ban, you know, there's no way I'm taking the job.
Right.
You know, and then on the flip side, if I'm Tennessee, I don't even know if I'm setting my sights on somebody like Chadwell, not to take anything away from what he did, but I think he's got 3 years as a head coach.
Right. None at the Power Five SEC level.
And two of them were losing seasons.
Yeah.
Right? And so, again, nothing against him, but I don't know if that sort of name with that sort of resume is what we should be shooting for. Now, as we've seen in the past, the last couple searches, you could say that Tennessee did not get its top target. And we ended up moving pretty far down the list before before making a hire. And so, I tend to think more along the lines of what you mentioned with Malzahn. Maybe not Malzahn specifically, but, you know, I like that he's, even if things maybe got a little stale at Auburn and the end wasn't so glorious, I think somebody with, you know, an established record of coaching in our league or in a comparable league, and then, you know, I also would probably lean toward moving with the sort of paradigm change that you're seeing in college football, where, you know, 10 years ago it was defense first, build from the inside out, and have game managers at quarterback and win games like that. But, you know, watching what Joe Burrow did at LSU, watching what Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian did with Alabama, and how they sort of evolved those offensive attacks, that's probably more the style that I would like to go for. What do you think? Do you like the idea of going with an offensive-minded guy, or, you know, do you want to stick with, you know, the old adage, defenses win championships?
Well, I think you've got to go offense, but, you know, to me, I think all of these style questions are secondary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you've got to get a guy that's been here, done that, mm-hmm. that's been through the ringer. You know, we've talked Gus, we've talked Herman, even a guy like Doug Marrone.
Yeah.
You know, that's a name that has been connected to Philip Fulmer. I don't know if he's actually in the running now that Fulmer's going to step down. Mm-hmm. But just a guy that's been through it, kind of seen it all, a guy that's going to be unfazed by, you know, a 4-8 season, because let's be honest, that's probably what's coming.
They're coming, absolutely.
You know, but yeah, like you're saying, Tennessee needs a style change. You know, that's why Hugh Freeze is so attractive, an offense like that. Scoring points, Tennessee football would be fun to watch again. You know, I'll be honest, you know, we get paid to write about Tennessee football. It's a job. Mm-hmm. It is a job. Mm-hmm. I wake up on Saturday and I don't want to watch Tennessee football. It's not fun.
Not at all.
Yeah, because, you know, you wake up and you play Alabama, you know what's coming. So, yeah, I would like to see an offense like that. You know, now, Lane Kiffin has been floated around. I don't think Lane Kiffin is going to win you any national championships, but he'd at least be fun. He'd score some points.
Yep.
You know, do something different. Let's get away from trying to recreate 2009 Alabama.
Yep.
You know, let's get away from I formation, two receivers, two tight ends. Let's do something outside of the box. So, and again, we don't know who's going to be making this hire. Odds are it's going to be Jimmy Haslam because he has the most money, and you know,
yes.
that's a whole separate set of issues here. But again, I think it comes down to how attractive this job is, and I think we can both agree it's not very attractive. So it's kind of wait and see mode. That's where we're at right now. I just posted our first hot board. Kind of going through some of these names, hop in the comments and discuss that there. We're going to shift gears, and we're gonna be a little happier, and we're going to talk about Rick Barnes and the Tennessee basketball team right after this break. All right, Nick, we are officially in your wheelhouse. It's Tennessee basketball time.
Excellent.
Tennessee basketball, 10-1 now? Just rolling along, slipped up against Alabama a couple weeks ago. As it turns out, Alabama's really good. just kind of generally speaking, Tennessee was delayed. What has been your takeaway from this team? Are you kind of surprised at some offensive struggles? Are you surprised at how good this defense is? Just super general to kick us off, what are your takes on this Tennessee team to start?
You know, to be honest, I was pretty vocal on Twitter in the offseason about, you know, how good I thought this Tennessee team could be. And a big part of that was listening to Rick Barnes talk about the team in various media sessions. We've all heard Rick in his chats with the media and reporters, and he's direct, he's blunt, and you know, you really don't have to guess how he feels. And he was, this offseason, it was the most consistently positive I've heard him speak about a team since he got to Tennessee. And that includes the 2018-2019 team that spent, what, 6 weeks at number one, mm-hmm. or something like that, and ended up winning 31 games and, you know, was a Carson Edwards barrage of threes.
Oh, let's not talk about that game.
away from going to what that was in the round of 32, wasn't it? So that would have been a trip to the Sweet 16, or am I a round off?
I think you're a round off. That was the Sweet 16.
Okay, so that would have been a trip to the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
Okay, so no, I can't say that I'm surprised with this team, how good they are. You know, I do think you're seeing a little bit of some struggles occasionally, and obviously we're not struggling that much. You know, Tennessee's 10-1, but I think you're seeing a little bit of offensively. You've got Victor Bailey Jr., who's newly eligible this year. You've got the two young freshmen. And so I think you've got a lot of new parts, and often it'll take, you know, it takes teams a while to really get a feel for each other and to gel. And so I think as the season progresses, this team is going to get better. And the Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer both came in defensively already strong defenders, to go with, you know, with Eve Pons in the middle. Jimmy Dykes calls him, you know, the best cleanup defender in college basketball, just meaning that, you know, if the guys up front let their man blow by them, Pons is there to clean up with a block shot or, you know, what have you. So I can't say I'm surprised at how good they are, because it's a really talented team. And you mentioned the loss to Alabama. So I think that sort of caught some people off guard. But it turns out that Alabama's really good this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, to me, it looks like they're, at the very least, one of the top three teams in the SEC this year.
Yeah, I mean, you could make an argument that it's Tennessee and Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wouldn't fight you. And I think it's important to note, Jaden Springer went out within 5 minutes of that game against Alabama.
Yep.
And just watching Tennessee's offense in the second half of that game, they really could have used Jaden Springer. A guy that was really starting to come into his own, really starting to create for the offense. To lose him was a big deal. Fulkerson and Pons were also in foul trouble in that game too. So I think it was kind of a perfect storm. Not taking anything away from Alabama. Obviously, like you said, they're very good. But I'll be interested to see that second meeting if it comes in the SEC tournament. I think that'll be a fun one. You kind of touched on this. This team's different. They're deeper. There's not any clear option. You know, last year down the stretch, it was kind of throw the ball into Fulkerson, see what happens. You know, before that, it was kind of throw the ball into Grant, and maybe Grant kicks it out to Admiral or he finds the rim. Now, you've got Fulkerson, you've got Pons, you've got Keon, you've got Jaden, you've got Victor Bailey, you've got Santiago, not to mention Josiah James. It seems like they've just got a lot of moving parts. And you touched on this, but it doesn't seem like they've gelled. And it seems like this group has so much more upside. And if they can just find a way to kind of gel and get a rotation, I think they can be a top five squad. They moved up to number six in the AP poll. But, you know, I think they could go hang with a Gonzaga, go hang with a Villanova, a Michigan, one of them upper tier teams. What do you think about that? I don't think we've seen anywhere close to their best game just yet.
Well, I think it's disappointing that the Tennessee's COVID issues occurred when they did, and obviously there's no good time for that. But the time that it did occur happened to nix the games. I think we lost the Gonzaga matchup. We lost a game against VCU. We lost a game against Notre Dame. And I think those games would have
really... Wisconsin, Memphis, too.
Yes, exactly. And so you've got several games there that would have really shown the fans how good this team could be. And it was early in the season, and so there was a good chance that we could have got shellacked in a couple of those games, so it's disappointing that we didn't get to see those, but to, you know, kind of to your point about the, you know, the team not gelling and not having a go-to guy, I think you'll start to see Jaden or Keon become that go-to guy. They're really the only, you know, Vescovi is, he's mostly a spot-up shooter.
Right.
And he's limited athletically, and so he's got great vision. He's done well to cut down on the turnovers, but getting to the basket, he can't really just blow by people. He's got to rely on understanding the angles. He's got to be crafty. Victor Bailey, he's more athletic, but he also tends to be more comfortable in a catch and shoot role. And so with the offense, because of some of the, you know, some of those limitations, I think that sort of makes the lack of a go-to guy a little more apparent, but this team, whereas, you know, they're not necessarily built to beat guys off the dribble and go one-on-one, I think on the flip side of that, you're seeing a really good passing team.
Yeah.
And I think some of that's a function of necessity. And you know, not only what was it, the two games ago, maybe we had one game recently, and maybe you can help me. Let's see, it was the game where we basically had assists on 85% of our made baskets. Let's see, what game was that?
Maybe A&M.
I think it was 23 out of... Yep, that was it. So you had 23 assists on 27 makes. And that's just an absurd number. I mean, that's, you know, that's wild. And so, you know, without having a real go-to guy, you've got the guys really moving the ball well. But I think as Keon and Jaden become more comfortable, I think you're likely to see those guys be more assertive, and as opposed to, you know, taking a couple dribbles and stopping and taking like a 10 to 12 foot jumper, I think you'll see them start to be more assertive and take it straight to the rack.
Yeah, and on Viscovia, I'm going to back up just a little bit.
Yeah.
I was texting a buddy, and I agree with your assessment that he's pretty much just a spot-up shooter right now. And I was telling him, we need to put Springer at the point, and we need to let Viscovi go be Skylar McBee out here.
Yep.
You know, I wanted to get your quick thoughts on that. I just think we're trending in the direction of putting Jaden at the point guard and letting him create, because at this point I think he's our best creator on the team.
Well, and a little bit of a shameless plug for me. I recently wrote an article, and it was about Jaden Springer and his, you know, playmaking ability. And I think, I'm trying to remember which game it was. Oh, that was against A&M too. So you saw his, in that game you really saw his vision and his ability to create. And, you know, Terry, a couple of those passes in the A&M game were just silly.
Oh, special, yeah.
I mean, they were phenomenal passes. And, you know, the way he was, and in the article I talked about, he was, cross-sport metaphor here, he was like a quarterback who moves the safety over to the right with his eyes and his head. He looks right, but the whole time he knows he's going to throw it to his left. So he moves the safety to the right and then hits the guy that's got single coverage on his left. And you saw Jaden doing some of that against Texas A&M. And that's high-level basketball. And hopefully, and even Barnes talked about it in the offseason, about wanting to move Viscovi off the ball. You know, Rick was excited about the chance of him getting to play that role of more off the ball catch and shoot. And I think, you know, in the off season, we were, at least I was, a little concerned about the backup point guard role, because Bailey, Johnson, Springer, they're more naturally suited to play off the ball. But like you said, I think we're seeing Jaden become more comfortable, and, you know, I'm with you. I would like to see him get a lot more opportunities, you know, playing lead guard and initiating the offense. But I think part of the concern there is that Viscovi seems to be still the only one who's consistently comfortable bringing up the ball and handling the ball against pressure. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I think the only way to get through that and to get Jaden more comfortable handling the ball is to let him do it in game situations.
Yep, I'm 100% in agreement. And you've got, over half the conference season to do that before you start getting into tournament stuff. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think it's something that we need to see. I think you hit the nail on the head with Vescovi just being limited athletically, and the TV broadcast touched on that. And that might have worked where he's used to playing, but it's not going to work in the SEC going in and throwing up those shots, all of them against Alabama that got thrown out. So I think this team's still evolving, and you hope that they can keep this core together perhaps for another year. I don't think it's likely. You've got an article coming out in the morning, if we want to preview that real quick before we get out of here, on Keon and Jaden's pro prospects. What do you think about each of those guys, and in particular Keon, since we've talked so much about Jaden? What do you think about what they're going to do and their decision to enter the league next year?
Well, I think preseason you saw a lot of mock drafts, and it was a pretty consistent theme that most people expected both of them after this season to get lottery grades and go ahead and make the jump to the NBA. And Keon, I was more excited about Keon than I was Springer before the year started. And I'm no scout. I'm no talent evaluator. I just watch the games. But Keon in high school, you saw his highlights, and I was in the article. I reference one of our co-workers at SB Nation, Ricky O'Donnell, who does all kinds of stuff. But one of the things he works on is the NBA draft, and he called in his mock draft, in his first mock draft for the 2021 draft, he called Johnson a nuclear athlete. And I loved that phrase because when you watch him, that's what you see.
Yep.
His shooting is still not quite there. He's gone 1-for-1 from three in the past two games, and that's risen his percentage to like 24% from deep.
That's rough.
Yeah, that's tough. It's hard to make it in the league shooting 24% from three-point range. But you see plays, like that up and under move. Oh, Terry, what game was that from? Was that from the A&M game as well?
Oh man, might have been Arkansas.
Either way, he drives baseline and he goes up. And he leaves the floor, a good 2 or 3 feet away from the basket, and goes up and just glides through the air. Goes up on the far side of the rim, glides through the air, then goes under the basket for a reverse layup and finishes. And it, the Tennessee basketball Instagram account made a comparison to that famous Dr. J move where,
of course,
and it does, the similarities were pretty serious. It was just a beautiful play. But I think Keon, I think he's a little less polished than Jaden is at this time. And so the kind of common opinion, I think, is still that both of them will get lottery grades and both of them will go. But right now I think Jaden is the more well-rounded player, and Keon potentially, and the NBA drafts on potential, we know that, but he's a really, really good defender, and he's athletic. But if you can't shoot from consistently from outside 10 feet, and you're a guard, you know, where does that put your draft status likely to be at?
Yeah, especially in today's league. You know, mm-hmm. we've seen such an emphasis ever since Steph Curry entered the league on the three ball, and we've kind of seen the league evolve and build around that. So mm-hmm. that's definitely something that has stood out to me, his lack of shooting. And you said it in your three things post for the Vanderbilt game. You know, if you don't have it, it's kind of hard to learn it. You know, it, not a lot of people that don't have it find it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's something that we need to pay close attention to. Something that might, you know, keep him in Knoxville. I think it's a long shot, but mm-hmm. it's something that might keep him in Knoxville for another year. You know, real quick, someone dropped this comparison early in the year, mm-hmm. and it stuck, and it was Dwayne Wade for Keon Johnson,
right?
And you know that just really, you know, a guy that struggles from the outside, mm-hmm. But a guy that can really finish at the rim, really creative at the rim. So I think that's kind of his ceiling. Where does Dwayne Wade go in today's NBA? I don't know. It's mm-hmm. changed. It's changed quite a bit. But it's exciting, you know. Tennessee's kind of got a pipeline here mm-hmm. To the NBA for the first time, really ever. It's not going to stop. Rick Barnes is recruiting like a madman. He's got it rolling, mm-hmm. And Tennessee's going to have decisions to make every single offseason.
Yep.
So, you know, you look at the upcoming schedule. You got a trip to Florida. And then you're home against Missouri. So it's a pretty big week for Tennessee basketball. You know, just completely overshadowed by the dumpster fire that is Tennessee football. So, you know, that's typically how it always is. But mm-hmm. anyways, we'll have both sports covered. Nick will be primarily on the basketball beat. I'll have football covered, and everyone else will probably be on football as well. But Nick will have you covered on the basketball side. Check out RockyTopTalk.com. We're going to post these a lot more often. Me and Nick on here are going to get you through the basketball season and whatever comes of this Tennessee football coaching search. So be sure and subscribe. Drop us a comment. Drop us a rating. You can find us on any major podcast platform. And thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.